This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. The rollout of President Obama's signature piece of legislation, the Affordable Care Act, has not been as successful as the administration had hoped. The government's healthcare website has been plagued with problems, and the president last week had to announce an administrative change that will allow people with private health insurance plans to keep them longer than first anticipated. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us today for our monthly politics chat. You can join our conversation. The phone number is 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. And Ken Rudin, it's a pleasure to have you back on Cincinnati Edition.
I'm thrilled to be here.
And as always, I think you have a trivia question for us.
Well, I do. The Dick Cheney's been in the news this week, or at least his daughters has been in the news this week, or they've been fighting over same-sex marriage. Mary Cheney is a lesbian married with two children, who of course supports same-sex marriage, and her sister Liz, who's running for the Senate in Wyoming. I think by definition, if you're running for the Senate from Wyoming, you oppose same-sex marriage. But anyway, the trivia question is: before Dick Cheney, who was the last vice president whose child ran for the U.S. Senate?
Okay. Before Dick Cheney, the last vice president whose child ran for the Senate, you think you know the answer to that? 513-419-7100, and we'll let some folks call in with their guesses and get to those in just a second. We started the intro talking about the Affordable Care Act, and we'll get to that, but actually there is some breaking political news from D.C. that just happened this afternoon, and it involves filibusters in the Senate. Tell us what happened this afternoon.
Well, to say there's breaking news coming out of the Senate is pretty remarkable, considering there's never news coming out of the Senate. But this is not only breaking news, it's historic, and that is that Harry Reid has pulled the nuclear option, and that is basically that because the Republicans have been filibustering President Obama's nominees, many to the cabinet and lesser appointments, but also to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is pretty significant. Harry Reid said enough is enough, and he pulled the nuclear option, which means that it no longer takes 60 votes to stop a filibuster, and so now all it is majority. So because the Democrats have 55 votes in the Senate, and they don't have 60, of course, now they can pass legislation, they could pass confirmations with just 51 votes in the Senate. Harry Reid did that today. The Senate voted on it. The vote was 52-48. And now it's not just a majority vote that is required to pass to confirm one of President Obama's nominees for a judgeship or something like that. And, of course, the Democrats are thrilled and the Republicans are livid.
Yeah, I mean, this is absolutely historic. I mean, this changes the game completely. What are the Republicans saying?
Well, they're saying a lot of things. First of all,
what's Mitch McConnell saying?
Well, the roles were pretty reversed a bunch of years ago when the Democrats were filibustering President Bush nominees on the circuit court, and Mitch McConnell was talking about then in the majority, and the Republican actually was Bill Frist in the majority then. He was talking about employing the nuclear option, but they worked out a deal. Now McConnell's saying this is a power grab by a desperate party, that it's all because they're trying to distract from the Democrats' woes about Obamacare, and this is just a complete distraction, but it's a power grab. And be careful what you wish for, McConnell told the Democrats, that the next time the Republicans control the Senate, which could happen in 2014, theoretically, probably not, but it could, you know, the things could be reversed. And so, I mean, look, the relationship between the two parties was abysmal to begin with, and it's certainly not going to be made any better after today's action.
Well, I mean, it's true. I mean, you have to live with this if the control of the Senate changes. I mean,
that's true, and I kind of think, I mean, I'm not getting into the heads of any Democrats, but first of all, the Democrats have said publicly, we'll live with it, we'll just live with the consequences. Right now, nothing is getting done. This is the third or fourth D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals judge that President Obama, Obama's nominees that have been filibustered by the Republicans. But I wonder if the Democrats are calculating that, well, maybe the Republicans will never win the White House again, given the fact that the kind of nominees they've been coming up with, and the fact that the Republican Party is so split during the presidential year. So maybe they're thinking that, well, there'll never be a Republican president in the near future who will make those nominees and make those nominations. But right now, it's, you know, it's like anything could go, anything could happen. And I think McConnell is threatening that, well, you know, you think it's bad now, wait till we get through with it.
When we talk about the filibuster, just so I'm clear now, this is just a filibuster on nominees. It's not necessarily all filibusters even pertaining to, like, legislation?
That's correct. It's not including legislation. It's also not including Supreme Court nominees. U.S. Supreme Court nominees, they said that'll be separate, that the same rules will apply. But that's just the way the Democrats have defined it now. It's just that it'll be executive branch nominees and lower court judges. But, you know, the Republicans can say, okay, when we're in power, we'll change it to anything we want. I mean, so, but right now, you're absolutely right. It's just about these nominees of the president's, not legislation, not U.S. Supreme Court.
When you, I think when this was talked about, maybe at the first of this year, there was the talk that the Republicans would shut down the Senate. And you joked when I said there's breaking news from the Senate because nothing happens there. What could be the practical effect if they, I mean, shut down the Senate? There's absolutely no legislation goes through?
Well, already they're talking, Republicans are talking about, you know, having roll call votes on whether somebody can go to the bathroom or not. I mean, they're just going to stall and make things as difficult and as obnoxious as possible because they feel that's what the Democrats did to them, that even though both sides were off them for so many years, ultimately it just didn't happen because they knew what the consequences were. But I guess the Democrats feel that, you know, enough is enough. Once again, the Republicans threatened, filibustered another D.C. Court of Appeals judge. And I keep talking about the D.C. Court of Appeals. A lot of people feel this court, which has three vacancies on it right now, this is almost like a farm team for the U.S. Supreme Court. John Roberts, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Clarence Thomas, Justice Scalia, all of them came from the D.C. Court of Appeals, so obviously that's a very important bench, and both sides know it.
Just on the lighter side, do we know is going to the restroom a debatable motion?
Well, I think
it might turn out to be. but we'll just
say, I know a lot of senators tell the other one that they're full of it, but I don't think that's the same thing there.
Congressional Republicans are not held in high esteem right at the moment. Would these kind of tactics just make it worse with the public?
Well, let's be honest with it. Let's be honest here. Nobody is.
I know, yeah.
Right now, President Obama has the lowest numbers of his presidency.
Sure.
Now, while it's not as low as Republicans in Congress, but you know something, I wonder if I think if you're a partisan Democrat, you think this is a good move. If you're a Republican, you think it's a bad move. And the question is what the independents think. But the Republicans are trying to make the argument that, look, as bad as things are, we still have rules that we've abided by. You know, the rule... until 1975, it was 67 votes you needed to end the filibuster. And in 1975, they amended it to 60 votes. But now this is obviously a partisan thing. It's really ruffled feathers, angered members on both sides. And, I just think, you know, you opened up the show by saying this is historic. It is historic, and the consequences are still yet to be seen.
Now, while this is historic now, does this last until the next term would begin, which would be, I guess, 2015? Or is it in place now until the Senate somewhere down the road would decide to change it?
I think it's the latter. I mean, of course, you could change the rules every new Congress. You could change it. They have the ability to change it, as the Democrats said today, that since 1977, Senate rules have been changed 18 times. Not as significant as this, but yes, the rules have been changed. But basically, these stay in play until the Senate decides to change the rules once again. But you need another change for it to change, as opposed to starting fresh in 2015.
And certainly, until these nominees get through.
Well, you know, they're probably going to do it in succession. Patricia Millett, one of the judges who was filibustered by the Republicans. The Senate has already passed her nomination by a 55, I think it was 55 to 42 vote or 43 vote. I think two or three senators abstained. Democrats are happy about this. Carl Levin of Michigan, Joe Manchin of West Virginia, and Mark Pryor, who's in a tough race from Arkansas. At least those three have voted against the Reid move to change the rules, because I guess they feel that either the traditions of the Senate, even though nothing's working, the traditions should be honored, and two, it could come back to bite us.
If I've got the names wrong, you'll correct me, but I think when this was reversed, when the Republicans were threatened the nuclear option many years ago, Bill Frist was the majority leader, and there were a gang of 14 senators who came together and came up with a compromise. And I believe Mike DeWine
of Ohio was one of them. Yes.
And isn't McCain a thought perhaps that maybe that cost him his reelection chances in 2006?
Oh, yeah.
It
certainly angered Republicans back in Ohio, and it had a lot to do with them not going out and doing any work for him whatsoever.
Right. Of course, Mike DeWine had the misfortune of running for re-election in a very strong Democratic year, and that's where Sherrod Brown took advantage of it. But at the same time, John McCain was saying today, he said, look, yes, it's not working well, but we still have been talking, and we still, as we worked it out under the Bill Frist era, we could work it out against the Harry Reid era, but Democrats probably felt that nothing was working and nothing was about to work, and they felt it was okay, or at least legitimate, to take that step.
This is Cincinnati Edition. We're talking with Ken Rudin, and his trivia question was, before Dick Cheney, who was the last vice president whose child ran for the Senate, and it must be a stumper because I think we've only had one guest so far. John from Wyoming, you've been very patient. What do you believe the answer to that question is?
Is it Gerald Ford?
How about Gerald Ford?
Gerald Ford did have a bunch of kids, including Jack Ford. I'm just trying to think of the kids' names. I don't remember Jack Ford, but none of his children ever ran for office, let alone the Senate.
All right, John, we appreciate your guest. Thank you. And let's see, we have David from Union Township with a guest. David, what's your guess?
Walter Mondale.
Walter Mondale's son, Ted, did run for governor of Minnesota, and I think he also ran for attorney general of Minnesota, never ran for the Senate.
Howard must have had that answer because he thought that was it.
Mondale was the first thing I thought of, but yeah, you're right.
All right, David, we appreciate your guess. Again, if you think you know the answer, before Dick Cheney was the last vice president whose child ran for the Senate, 513-419-7100. We're talking today with political junkie Ken Rudin, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson, and this is our monthly politics chat with political junkie Ken Rudin. You can join the conversation, again, 513-419-7100, or email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, 513-419-7100. And we're going to continue to take a couple of answers here for the trivia question. Again, before Dick Cheney, who was the last vice president whose child ran for the Senate? And we have Chris on the line from Newport. Chris, your guess.
Adlai Stevenson,
Ken.
Adlai Stevenson's son, who conveniently was named Adlai Stevenson III, did run for the Senate and was elected to the Senate from Illinois, but he's not the last one to do it.
Oh, okay. So that maybe narrows it down a little bit. Chris, we appreciate your guess.
Thanks.
We've got some others lined.
Didn't sound too happy.
Well, he was right. It's just not the most current.
No, it's a good answer. Good answer.
We got one. Let's see. We got a couple more lined up here. Jay from Northside. Jay, who do you believe the answer is?
This is a sheer guess. Was it Dan Quayle?
Dan Quayle?
Dan Quayle's son, Ben Quayle, was elected to the Congress, to the House from Arizona in 2010. And he lost his seat in the primary 2012, but never for the Senate. He ran for the House.
All right, Jay, we appreciate your guess. And let's try Bill, I guess, calling from Anderson. Bill? Bill, are you there? Oh, we lost Bill. All right, again, if you think you know the answer to that, again, before Dick Cheney, who was the last vice president whose child ran for the Senate, 513-419-7100. Let's talk, Ken, about the Affordable Care Act. What do you make of what's happened since the rollout started? the first part of October, things were sort of quiet because most people were focused on the government shutdown. And then once that was resolved, a lot of attention turned to the Affordable Care Act, and that has not necessarily been good for the Obama administration.
You think? I mean, it's remarkable what's happened in the fortunes of the two parties in the time from the government shutdown, when the Republicans were taking all the heat and the Democrats were just sitting back saying, we don't have to say anything because the Republicans are just destroying themselves. And then once the shutdown ended and the government reopened, then people were realizing that they were either having problems signing up, and we talked about the glitches on the website, but the fact that President Obama said over and over and over again that if you're happy with your health care policy, you can keep it, which turned out to be not exactly the case. So Democrats who have been backing President Obama on this to the hilt from day one are suddenly saying, oh my goodness, we have a problem here. And now there's the Republicans who feel they have an issue that they could take advantage of. And they're reminding everybody in almost every state where there's a competitive Senate race that, you know, your Democratic senator voted for President Obama, and they promised the same thing. You can keep your insurance company. So Democrats are panicking, to say the least. They're aware of the possible retribution at the polls in 2014. And we saw last Friday the interesting spectacle of 39 Democrats in the House voting for a Republican bill that would accomplish just that you could keep your insurance policies, because so many Democrats have just realized they don't want to be part of a Republican campaign commercial. So, you know, if we thought the Democrats had the advantage a month ago, they certainly don't have it now.
Yeah, a lot of Democrats are jumping ship. Bill Clinton's role in all of this, I mean, things were bad enough for President Obama until Bill Clinton started talking about, you know, you got to keep your promises. You make a promise, you keep it. How devastating was that?
Well, you know something, that's one of the more fascinating stories about this whole story, because yes, Bill Clinton was great for President Obama. He campaigned for him throughout 2008 and 2012.
Right.
He gave this great speech at the 2012 convention, and everybody said, oh, he's the greatest guy. But clearly, if Bill Clinton is for anything, it's for Bill Clinton, but more importantly, he's for Hillary Clinton. And he knows very well that if Obamacare is a mess, going into 2014, let alone 2016, the Democratic nominee, which everybody expects to be Hillary Clinton, will pay for it. So Bill Clinton is doing what Hillary Clinton cannot do. Hillary Clinton cannot and will not criticize President Obama. She will not give a little jab saying, "Well, you got to keep your word." Whereas Bill Clinton does what he wants. He always has. He's kind of a loose cannon. And even if he's saying things that Democrats like, you always know there's a little wincing going on at the White House because they say, well, maybe Bill shouldn't have put it that way. So, but, you know, that's exactly what he's doing, and it's completely understandable. But you know exactly how President Obama reacted when he heard what Bill Clinton had to say about keeping promises.
And these Democrats voted with the Republicans. I mean, they're just running scared. I mean, they're in districts for the most part, which are, you know, could go either way.
Right. And a lot of them are, you know, I mean, first of all, if these are Democrats who obviously, look, we saw Democrats doing really well in 2006 and 2008, and then suddenly they got clobbered in 2010. So these are Democrats who survived the massacre, the GOP massacre of 2010, and survived it into 2012. So they know that if they're in a marginal seat, a district where Mitt Romney may have won it, or they're freshmen, or they're, you know, ripe for they're vulnerable, they know that their career is on the line. And the easiest kind of member of Congress to defeat is a freshman, because they have not gotten enough time to solidify their standing in the district. So a lot of these freshmen who may have, you know, been part of those 39 who voted with the Republicans, they know that, my goodness, you know, I'm in the crosshairs of the Republicans, and I've got to I just got to show that I have some distance between myself and the White House.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Again, we're talking today with political junkie Ken Rudin, and he asked a trivia question earlier. Before Dick Cheney, who was the last vice president whose child ran for Senate? We have some folks lined up who'd like to take a stab at that, and we're going to start with Robert in Hyde Park. Your guess?
Hello. My guess, I hope it's right, is Hubert Humphrey.
Ken, Hubert Humphrey.
Hubert Humphrey is the correct answer.
All right.
in
Goodness.
And I heard, I'm hearing these bells.
That's right.
But in 1988, Skip Humphrey ran for the U.S. Senate in Minnesota and lost to David Durenberger. As a matter of fact, when Skip Humphrey later ran for governor, in the primary, he beat Walter Mondale's son in the primary. Yeah. So that was kind of interesting about Mondale. But Hubert Humphrey is the correct answer.
All right. Robert, very good. I'm going to put you back on hold, and we will get your information so we can get you some fabulous prizes for getting that trivia question right.
Yes. And I want it duly noted that I had written down that answer and showed it to Jay.
Just right before I took that phone call. So let's get back to the...
Howard, in fairness, we've mentioned every vice president in the world.
Well, that's true. You're right. Yeah, except Alvin Barkley, yes.
Right.
Let's get back. We're discussing the Affordable Care Act and the president's approval rating. Some might say, look, President Obama can't run for another term. Why are his approval numbers so important to Democrats since he can't run for reelection?
Well, look at his numbers in 2012 were very, very high. A lot of Democrats who were up for the Senate, remember, a lot of the Democrats who were up for re-election in the Senate in 2014 were elected with him in 2008. So if you live on Obama, you may die on Obama. I mean, I don't mean to put it that bluntly, but the point is that if the president's numbers are doing well, the Democratic Party's numbers are doing well, the mood in the party is better as well. But if people are just saying that, you know, Obamacare is not working and President Obama's leadership qualities are lacking and, you know, he may not have been the most forthcoming when it comes to the promise about keeping your insurance company, it could suppress Democratic turnout. It could cause disunity in the Democratic Party. It's something that we saw among the Republicans in 2012. So, you know, the last thing they want is for it not to work. Of course, it's not universally popular, but it would be helpful for the Democrats if it showed some kind of success. And the Democratic argument from the beginning is that these people need, change. There are so many people not covered in this country that something has got to give. You've got to have a bill that allows for pre-existing conditions. But if your premiums are going to double, if your insurance company is going to be if your insurance policy is going to be canceled, well, the Obama numbers go down and the generic Democratic numbers go down with it.
One of the things I've been seeing a little bit is, obviously Republicans are gleeful about Obama's numbers going down and Democrats jumping ship and kind of scrambling. But other Republican voices are saying, look, this may not all be good news. I mean, we got to come up with something of our own as an answer.
Well, there is that, and that's absolutely true. But, you know, I just remember in 2006, I don't remember Democrats coming up with great alternatives to, you know, the high gas prices, the high food prices, the mess about Katrina. I just know that they said we're not Republicans. And so I do remember in 2006 and to a lesser extent in 2008, but especially in 2006, Democrats won because they were not Republicans. In 2010, when the Democratic brand was bad because of health care, Republicans won not because of what they stood for, but because they were not Democrats. So it's a sad statement to say that, you know, it's basically who you dislike least. It's not who you like more, but who you dislike least, and that could very well determine who wins in 2014.
The government officials have been promising by the end of this month, the end of November, that the website will be functioning, will be fixed, it will function better than it does right now, and they say that it's getting better every day. Should that not hold true, is there going to be mounting pressure to maybe delay all of the Affordable Care Act for perhaps a year until they can get things worked out?
Well, you know, it's funny. One of the reasons the Republicans shut down the government is because they wanted to either defund or delay the Affordable Care Act, and the Democrats said, oh, we're not changing anything, and so they shut down the government and paid the price. Now you're seeing some Democratic actions in the Senate. Mary Landrieu, who's up for a tough reelection battle from Louisiana next year, has proposed just about that. He says, look, you know, if it's not working, let's just delay these things. Let's let the insurance companies keep the policies, and you see more and more Democrats talking about that. So, You know, it's something that the Democrats poo-pooed in the beginning because, of course, it was what the Republicans were talking about. But now that the November deadline doesn't look like it's going to stand, it just looks like the website will be fixed by the end of November, and the administration has already indicated that. So you kind of think that maybe, you know, this is a postponement is exactly what you want. And, of course, you know, one of the things we were talking about or thinking about earlier was that one of the reasons, I mean, there are a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons President Obama didn't want to get rid of Kathleen Sebelius, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, was because the confirmation hearings for a successor would have been another nightmare. But of course, now with the change in the filibuster rules, I'm wondering if that still applies.
Yeah, that's a good question. I was talking to Mara Liasson here on the show last week.
Who?
Your good friend Mara.
Oh, I love Mara. I heard your show. It was a great show. Mara was
well,
great.
Thanks. And she was talking about Kathleen Sebelius, and she said, you know, well, he's not going to fire because you couldn't get anybody confirmed through the Senate. And you think that's even more the case now that since Harry Reid dropped the bomb today?
No, it's less the case now. Now you probably can get somebody confirmed through the Senate because cabinet officials and lower, you know.
Yeah. Sure.
But, I mean, who knows? I mean, look, ultimately, I don't think that was the reason he kept Sebelius on. They were close. Sebelius was an early Obama supporter in 2007, 2008, when he was running against Hillary Clinton. So there's obviously a bunch of loyalty there. And ultimately, it's not Kathleen Sebelius who administered the website or failed to administer the website. It's really just a policy that, I mean, when you think of it, was not fully tested and fully ready to go when it went. And I mean, more people than Kathleen Sebelius are responsible for that.
E.J. Dionne is on All Things Considered each Friday with a little political analysis in the 4 o'clock hour. And last week, he was talking about the Republicans and the government shutdown the first part of October, and now the problems for the president with the Affordable Care Act. He essentially said that his thoughts on it were that each party was beating themselves up with a 2x4. How do you respond to that?
Well, I mean, look, both, especially, I think there's more of an ideological chasm in the Republican Party than there was in the Democratic Party. The battles that went on over the shutdown, over the Tea Party versus the establishment, which we saw implemented and you know, in the Virginia gubernatorial race, that still exists, and I don't think that's going away anytime soon. I think if we're talking about the 2016 battle for president, those two rivalries will show up as it has in the past, and that's not going away. I still think the Democrats are more united. There's no such thing as like the Occupy Wall Street wing of the Democratic Party that's making a difference. I think the Democrats are on the same page. They just want it to work, and if it was working well as they thought it would work, there would be less backbiting. Now, it's not so much criticism of Obama as I'm hearing that, well, you know, something, we just care about our constituents out there, and if they're not getting what we promised, we've got to get it fixed. So many Democrats are saying it's too early to panic, and that may be the case. Look how different things went politically for the fortunes of the Democrats and Republicans in the past month. We still have a year to go before the November 2014 elections, and I'm sure there'll be other crises that come up that will change the calculation before then.
But that disarray in the Republican Party is would explain at least why the Democrats in the Senate might well believe that it's going to be a long time before there's another Republican president in the White House.
Well, that's my view, too. I think that's true. I mean, of course, again, as we talked about earlier about Bill Clinton, if somehow the failures of Affordable Care Act, if the problems exist through 2016, that could very well damage the Democratic Party. But at the same time, the Republican Party is going to have to coincide, you know, get its Chris Christie wings and its Ted Cruz wings on the same page because, you know, after two wings, we hang up. But more importantly, ignoring that stupid joke, but you know, the Republicans are going to have to be on the same page to tell the American people that they have a plan for the country that's far better, far superior than what the Democrats are offering, and they can't do that if they're fighting with each other.
What do you think of the field out there right now for the Republicans in 2016? Who's viable, who's not?
Yeah, I mean, who knows who's running? I mean, we assume Chris Christie's running. We assume that, you know, Rand Paul / Marco Rubio / Ted Cruz are running.
Right.
But then there are other, you know, there are folks like, what if John Kasich, you know, who ran once before for about 15 minutes
right.
in 1999, but what if John Kasich wins a big re-election battle next year? You know, governor of Ohio is pretty significant. What about Scott Walker of Wisconsin? A lot of people feel that governors is the wave of the future. And what about Jeb Bush? I mean, Bush has been a four-letter word for the longest time, but there are a lot of people who feel that, you know, he's the guy who could turn the party around. But every time I see a response or a reaction to what Jeb Bush says, is just either a deafening silence or Tea Party frustration with him. So,
what about Paul Ryan? I mean, he's shown up in Iowa lately, and
I don't think he runs. I think his name will be out there, and he will make the visits to Iowa and New Hampshire, but ultimately, he may be the future of the Republican Party in the House, especially if John Boehner says, okay, I've had enough of this crap. But I think Paul Ryan, he has a budget battle that he's in the middle of right now, that, you know, because once again in January and February, we may see another battle about funding the government, about the debt ceiling, and Paul Ryan will be the face of the party then. Let's just see if he can survive those couple of months and see what his political fortunes look like.
For the Democrats, does Hillary Clinton have to worry about having the front-runner status? I think it's fair to say that she was the favorite in 2008, and history shows how that turned out. Is that maybe something that she wants to try to avoid this time, although it doesn't seem that she's doing that?
Well, you know something, I was one of those people in 2007 who were convinced that Hillary Clinton would get the nomination. I mean, it's always dangerous, and here's a good example of it, but it's always dangerous to talk about a front runner in a year or two before any of the voters go to the polls or the caucus sites. But having said that, you know, even then, even with Hillary Clinton running, you still had Obama, you still had John Edwards, you still had Chris Dodd, you still had Joe Biden, you still had Bill Richardson. Not that they were, or Dennis Kucinich, I mean, not that they were all giant killers, but they were all in the race. I don't know who gets in the race this time.
The bench is a little
thin.
I'm not
convinced that Joe Biden runs if Hillary's in the race. And the thought of a vice president, you know, not, you know, who wants to be president, not getting that opportunity is pretty much unprecedented in recent political history. But, you know, they keep talking about Martin O'Malley. They talk about Elizabeth Warren. I think if Hillary runs, it's hers for the nomination. But, you know, I said that 4 years ago or 8 years ago, and I was wrong then.
If, let's say, Vice President Biden is one of the contenders along with Hillary Clinton, could that open the door for maybe someone from the outside? They're looking at two veterans of Washington, and that, you know, maybe that they want to turn to somebody who's not a Washington insider.
Well, and that's interesting to think of, because when you think of it, I mean, Hillary Clinton will be 69 years old. Joe Biden will be 73 years old. This is not new faces in the party. And when you think of the Marco Rubios, the Ted Cruzes, the Paul Ryans, that's kind of a young face in the Republican Party. Now, ultimately, I don't know what that matters. President Obama used his youth and freshness against John McCain to his benefit in 2008. A lot depends on what the economy is looking like, what the country is looking like. But right now, I just feel that there's so much feeling of, I mean, I hate to use this word, but entitlement about Hillary Clinton, that she's earned it, that there's history in the making, that she should not be denied. And, you know, most of the other Democrats, the Andrew Cuomo's, the Martin O'Malley's, the Elizabeth Warren's, they still have plenty of time to run in other years. I just think they don't do it. I just think if there's a challenge to Hillary Clinton, it's going to be a Dennis Kucinich type of candidate that's more of a protest than a serious threat.
Let's talk about Chris Christie a little bit more. You know, I mean, here's a guy who can at least go out and say, hey, I'm a Republican who wins in a blue state. I can reach people. Does that automatically vault him up to the top of the list?
Well, one of the reasons we're spending so much time talking about Chris Christie, I mean, first of all, he's charismatic. He's bigger, and this is not a weight joke, but I mean, he is bigger than life. You know, he has his personality. You either love him or you just can't stand him, and people in New Jersey feel both. And of course, because New Jersey is one of the two states that had a gubernatorial race this year, that there's more attention on Christie than you would have, you know, in next year, for example, when there are so many governors running for election. But he could prove, he can say that, look, you know, we keep losing because we don't have Republicans who can appeal to Latinos, who can appeal to women, who can appeal to union workers. And Christie showed, albeit against a weak Democratic candidate in a very blue state, that he can do that. But again, that's a great argument for November, for the general election. That's not the argument you want to hear. You're going to hear in Iowa or New Hampshire or South Carolina. You want true blue, true-blooded, conservative, litmus test-following conservatives, and that's not Chris Christie.
Yeah.
And that may be the problem for the Republicans if they ever want to recapture the White House again.
What'd you make of the governor's race in Virginia with Terry McAuliffe pulling it off?
This is fascinating because, one, I thought that Terry McAuliffe was going to win by a more substantial margin.
Right.
The Washington Post poll had 12 points for the longest time. So I figured the result would be, okay, Ken Cuccinelli, the Republican nominee, lost, and he lost big, and he's a big Tea Party guy, so there's a message, Tea Party overreached. But the fact that he only lost by 2.5 percentage points, very, very close vote, it makes the argument, well, maybe had the Republicans stayed with him, he could have won. And even though he was thought to be very extreme on women's reproductive rights and the environment and things like that, he almost won it. Now, one, it's true that Terry McAuliffe was a flawed candidate himself, but the fact that a very so-called extreme candidate in Virginia lost by such a close margin makes you think, well, the battle is still going on. I don't know what the lesson is in Virginia, and both sides still say that, you know, we're both right. Had he lost by a bigger margin, I think the Tea Party brand would have been hurt, but that wasn't what happened.
Go back to your friend Mara Liasson. She was saying last week that Virginia basically has become the bellwether state for presidential elections. We kind of liked being the bellwether here for quite a while, but do you agree with that?
Well, it's certainly a state to watch. I mean, look, for the long right now, the Democrats won all three. It looks like if they win the attorney general in Virginia, they're still recounting it. But they won all three statewide races there in the November election. They have both Senate races, and Obama won it twice in a row. It's I don't even know if it's a purple state anymore. It's really good news for the Democrats. I don't know if Virginia holds that. Look, Colorado could hold it, too. There are a lot of states that just seem to drastically change from one election to another. And, of course, you know, Ohio always has the reputation of, you know, no Republican has won the presidency without it. But very few Democrats win it without it, too. So
right.
Don't give up on the importance of Ohio just yet.
Well, that's good news here.
Ken, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, Steve LaTourette was on Morning Edition talking about spending some, I believe it's his own money, to run anti-Tea Party ads. What do you make of that effort?
Well, that's what's happening in the Republican Party around the country. Of course, we've seen the last couple of years, or since 2010, that it's been Tea Party money that has been used against Republican establishment figures. Dick Lugar in Indiana, a perfect example. They beat Dick Lugar in 2010 in Indiana, but then they lost the seat. That's obviously a problem. But then there were more and more folks like Steve LaTourette, like the Chamber of Commerce, that said, you know, the Tea Party is just driving us into nominating so extreme candidates that we can't win in November. So there's a bunch of groups now formed that will challenge Tea Party folks in the House and get more mainstream Republicans for the candidates, for the voters to decide upon. But the Tea Party folks will say this: look, you know, you could point out to the Tea Party losses in the Senate, but think of the Karl Rove / establishment Republicans who ran last year in Wisconsin, in North Dakota, in Hawaii, in New Mexico. They were all establishment, moderate conservative candidates, and they all lost for the Senate when in opportunities where they could have won. So the Tea Party people say, well, you can't just say that the Tea Party is responsible for the Republicans losing, because the mainstream established, the mainstream and establishment candidates aren't doing so well either. And again, that's the kind of battle that we saw in the aftermath of Virginia, and we're going to see it in 2014 in the primaries, which are coming up in just a couple of months.
Ken, real quickly, just before we let you go, there are some budget talks that are going on with a deadline of the middle part of December. What can we expect there with those talks continuing, and have those been sort of covered up or shadowed by the debate about the Affordable Care Act?
Well, of course, yeah, not many people are paying attention to it, but as we get close to deadlines, and this is always the case with deadlines, then suddenly we start to panic. But both Republican leaders in the House and Senate that there will not be another shutdown. There's not going to be anything like that. But again, I don't think that between Paul Ryan and Patty Murray, the Senate Democratic leader on the budget, they're not close to an agreement just yet. But again, we have to wait till we come exactly to the deadline to see what happens.
We've been talking with political junkie Ken Rudin, and he joins us once a month to talk politics. You'll find links to his website and his weekly podcast. That's at WVXU.org. Ken, thanks for joining us.
Jay and Howard, thank you so much.
And coming up next, WVXU's Tana Weingartner was at City Hall for the streetcar presentation. She's going to join us, and we'll talk about what happened there coming up. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.